Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Real Deal Pod with Jeff and Alistair. We're here for episode 6. How you doing, Jeff,
Wow.
my man? How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I'm in sunny Cancun right now. So just 2 hours ahead. It's almost lunchtime here.
Look at you, lucky man. Look at you. My wife and kids and father-in-law are actually in Mexico right now too. They just sent me pictures this morning of their lovely breakfast consisting of chilaquiles rojos. It's tortillas with red sauce, and then she's got scrambled eggs and French toast. And as I was telling you, I was left here to work, and I had toast with raspberry jam and a coffee.
You kept it real.
That's
You kept
me,
it real.
right? Somebody's here. Somebody's been left here to with work. How is it out there? What are you guys out there for right now?
Yeah, I'm here for a broker event with Mortgage Protection Plan. So there's about 150 brokers out here at a Seacrest in Cancun. So, you know, a short little appreciation trip from Manulife, and just rubbing shoulders with brokers all across Canada. It's good. It's good. You put too many brokers in a small space, so it can get pretty wild very quickly.
I could imagine. I remember my retail ones. They were quite fun and yet quite adventurous, all at the same time. Yeah, that's amazing. I got left here for to work. We just ended up completing a deal on the weekend, selling my lovely client's condo on Agnes. So congratulations to them. Market is still pretty busy. We had a lot of action. We had
Nice.
a lot of action on that property, but it's an amazing building. So amazing building. I argue it's probably the best one in Queensborough. It's the Elliott over on Queensborough in New West. So beautiful, beautiful building. So congratulations to my clients and congratulations to the future owners of this property. We're just going through subject removal now. So
yeah. How long was it on the market for before it sold?
It was only on the market actually for about a month.
Wow.
Yeah, and the thing is though, it's also a luxury, it's a luxury property too, so it didn't fall within the traditional 27 days. That's what in terms of that property, that price point, it's is
right.
just lands above, just a shade above a month. So sold within the time, sold above sales per square foot for the area. So very good. But again, that's all based on the quality of the building as well. The building is just, like I said, one of the best buildings in New West.
How old is the building?
2017.
Okay.
Yeah, 2017. And it's right, just steps away from Quakeway Elementary School, right on Agnes. So if you've seen Agnes, they've done a lot of transition, or a transition within that area. They've turned it into a walkable area, bike area. So it's really a family community, right? If you ever notice, right near the SkyTrains, they put up 15-minute communities, right, during SkyTrains things. So it's made to be very walkable, very accessible, open to more small businesses and such. Well, we don't have there's not the SkyTrain stop right there and right there on Agnes, but they turned it right into that 15-minute type of neighborhood. Highly walkable, lots of trails that are being built there. A new park is being done right around there. Just a lot of concentrated effort into building up the community over there in Queensborough. So beautiful, beautiful property. And the other thing I'd like to state is the realtor that I worked with, he's just amazing. And it was funny, I had two offers on that property, and it was really nice to work with both of those realtors. They were Eddie and Matthew, super good. I know we don't typically say names, but Eddie and Matthew deserve to have their names said. Super great realtors, very, very good. So both of their clients were well represented. So it was really nice. You know, I know us realtors sometimes get a bad rap within the market, and those two gentlemen, tremendous. So it was a pleasure.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference when you can partner with people on the other side that communicate well. You know, they know what they're doing. Because let's be honest, we've worked on that other side as well, and it's just a stress show for everybody. So when you can work with a professional that basically is on the same level, it just makes that experience so much better for everybody, right?
It really does. It's funny when you look, because we see contracts all the time, right? So when you see a contract from maybe a newer agent or an agent with less expertise in helping buyers or whatever that may be, and they send you in this contract where you read it over and you think, oh boy, their clients have no protection in this. And you're thinking, well, no, I'm acting on behalf of my seller, so I'm going to accept this offer because my seller is far more protected than their buyer is. You think, you know, wow, how are you writing this contract, right? Like, how are you servicing your client with this contract? So in getting these offers back and just knowing, you know, everything was, you know, there for both sides, right? It, yes, the contract sent over to me was weighted more on their end, as it should be. But then when the contract was sent back, right, in the counter, that was weighted equally. It was just, you know, both sides being able to say, oh yeah, that's fair. Oh yeah, that's fair. And it was just that nice. It was that easy without a lot of both sides going, what is this? What is that? How is this? And how is that? Right. It just, it made it seamless. And it just, again, it's additional proof that you have two parties that know what they're doing and working together for the common goal of making sure that both parties are happy. Right? Both parties are happy and both parties feel equally represented. It's that easy to get a deal done. So,
well, we always talk about power teams. And if you, again, on a power team, be it on their side or our side, again, if you have the right people on your team, it just makes that experience 1,000 times better. And let's be honest, like I was reading a stat, there's 25,000 realtors within the greater Vancouver area. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what it is. Someone told me 8,000 in the Fraser Valley. Yep. And unfortunately, I don't want to, we can even talk about the brokers. They're few and far between of the good, the better, and the best, right? So, so when you do find someone that you work well with, we talk about power teams. Stick with them because they do make that experience that much easier and that much better.
It's true. And once you find one, focus on that relationship. Focus on maintaining and maintaining and continuing that relationship. And if you are, as a client, if you are going to be moving on from your realtor, from your broker, whomever they may be, make sure you spend the time interviewing your next ones and asking those pointed questions to make sure that that next person representing you does in fact have your best interests at heart. That's the main thing, is making sure you take the time to ask those hard questions, because somebody that's truly wanting to be part of your power team and wanting to represent you isn't going to be afraid, isn't going to shy away from answering those hard questions, right?
And that's the great thing about these podcasts that we're doing, is asking what types of questions, questions, right? And this is probably a good segue into what we want to talk about today is if you're getting into a bad relationship,
right,
you might have to get a divorce.
Let's get into it. I know you've got some tanning and surfing to go get to. I have, you know, some more dry toast coffee and work to get to. So,
I'm a little bit jealous. Not so jealous.
Right. So we're going to be talking about what? Spousal separation and all that sort of ugly stuff when it comes to mortgages.
Well, like the reality of it is that out of every 10 marriages here in Canada, unfortunately, 4 of them are going to lead into separation and or divorce. So I always say, you know,
I was one of those four. I can say I've been a part of those four.
Yeah. And it is a thing. It's a thing that when we talk about mortgages and when you are going through a separation or a divorce, you know, I think it's really important that that people understand what you can do with that matrimonial home if you're going through it. Because I've worked on many files and spoke with many people, and they believe that the only thing that they can do is sell the home, and in doing so, you know, paying out, you know, that equity split, or they're gonna, you know, matrimonial debts. But the reality of it is this, Alistair, like when you are going through a separation, when you are going through a divorce, this is the only time that you can refinance your home back to 95% of the value of it. So most people believe, and it's true, when you are doing a refinance, you can only refinance it to 80% of the value. But when you are going through a separation and now there is going to be a equity division, and or you're paying out matrimonial debt, this is a time where you can come back in and refinance that home to 95% of the value. And in doing so, quite often, either one of those partners can stay in that matrimonial home, because everybody seems to want to stay in the matrimonial home.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I was going to say.
There's children.
Yeah.
Right. So I've talked to, it's just crazy. And I go back to our power team. I've talked to lawyers. They're not aware of this. I've talked to financial advisors. They're not aware of this. And it goes back to, you know, our discussion as far as working with the right people, working with the right professionals, getting the right advice. Because how many people do you know, Alistair, that has had to sell their home in order to basically, you know, split that equity division, or pay out the matrimonial debts or whatever that might look like? Whereas a lot of times they can stay in that matrimonial home, refinance to 95%, and in doing so, taking care of everything that they want to take care of.
I think that's the biggest call out, that when we are as realtors, right, when we are getting these unfortunate calls to sit down and have those discussions because parties are getting divorced, is to say, you know, if we are going to truly empower, advise, and represent our people, right, we need to take that stance of saying, okay, like, let's pause and say, do we really need to sell, right? Depending on the person you're representing, what are your intentions? Do you want to stay in the house? Okay. If you do, let's set you up then. Let's see if that is indeed a possibility, as opposed to quite a few realtors want to do is they, you know, divorce, bing, bing, bing. Oh, great, sell. I mean, listing. Let's sit down, get both parties, see if I can get the co-listing, and let's get them out of here and say, oh, let me get you out of this house so I can help you buy something else. Right. A lot of times that's not helping people. That's self-serving. It's helping your pocketbook, right? Yeah. You're seemingly coming across as a hero, saying, hey, I'm helping this person that's just going through a difficult time in their life, you know, purchase or sell something and purchase something. Well, by that same token, it's a difficult time in their life. So maybe moving wasn't the most prudent thing for them to be doing at that time. And you could have helped them a lot better by saying, okay, let's get you set up. Let's have a plan. And if indeed we do have to move, let's look at it now, right?
Yeah.
But let's start off by seeing if you can actually stay.
Yeah, I worked on a file last week and got a phone call from the mother of the lady going through this life event. And really was just kind of exploring the options of, hey, can my daughter stay in this home? Is it possible? Because again, which leads to this conversation, people don't know. So if we can just reach one person with this type of education and they can pass it forward, it's just so important. This lady had two kids. She was going through a divorce, wanted to stay in the home for herself and the kids. The husband wanted $175,000 as far as the, you know, the built up equity within the home that was his share. And again, in this particular case, if you refinanced it to 80%, it wasn't possible. Also had some matrimonial debt, about $60,000 of matrimonial debt that they had to get rid of. And in this particular case, we refinanced it, I think it was to about 92% of the value of the home. We were able to pull out that equity to pay out the spouse, and then in doing so, consolidated that matrimonial debt. And if that mother didn't make that phone call to the right broker or the right lending partner, that house could be very well on the market right now and being sold. So So it was a real blessing, and again, I felt a right opportunity to say, hey, you know what? If this is what this lady was believing, I think this is just a great thing for you and I to talk about and bring it to people's attention, right? So a couple of things to that, if you are going through a separation divorce and you are wanting to stay in the matrimonial home and you think you have to refinance it to 95% or up to 95% the value of the home to pay out the partner or to consolidate debt. It's so important though that within your separation agreement, it is clearly outlined within that separation agreement as far as how much equity is going to be paid out, because it has to be legally noted. And you also have to outline within your separation agreement what debts are going to be paid out, right? So if you don't do that and you want to do this refinance and it's not clearly written out within the separation agreement, you're going to run into a speed bump.
Yeah, and that's a great point because those are those. So that in my divorce, right? That was the first thing that I did. You know, okay, getting a divorce, I guess. Okay, we're selling, and that was it. I, you know, and I wish knowing now what I know, right? Hindsight's always 2020, but knowing what I know now, I wish I would have taken the time or at least sat down with somebody that would have been able to educate me properly because I went and made a whole mess of vicious mistakes, right? In terms of not asking the right questions and not maybe not doing the right things throughout my separation, right? That same thing put me in a space where thankfully I was able to get myself out of it, but probably could have kept myself away from that had I not just let emotion rule. And that's really what happens, right? Emotion rules, especially during these types of things. This is separations and divorce is a major impact in somebody's life, right? And so it causes you to act with less rationality, less analytics, and more emotion. And we all know emotion gets you in more trouble. So if I was to have had a power team, right, with me, right, they might have been able to pull me aside and say, hey, Alistair, calm down and let's take a look at this in steps, right? What, let me ask this, what are some of the challenges then that people face during this?
Well, I think what you just said is they do get the emotions in front and unfortunately that emotion can lead to some poor decisions, right? Or uneducated decisions. So the speed bump again is just not letting your emotion make one of the biggest decisions of your life. And we've said this before is that your home is your biggest piggy bank, right? Your home is your biggest appreciating asset. When you are going through a separation or a divorce, a lot of times you're fire selling that home because you just want to be done with it. And at times, you know, another speed bump is for that spouse who wants to refinance is qualifying for them because now you're going from that double income where you qualify, now you're going into that single income. And quite often it's important to understand that at that time, in this particular lady's case, she had to bring a parent to come on and co-sign for her so they could qualify. So the speed bump is just making sure that you don't get that emotion too far ahead of you and start making some mistakes on the biggest asset of your life.
Okay. So from a paperwork standpoint, is there a lot of documents that they should have prepared or?
Yeah. Paperwork standpoint, again, what you obviously need to sign a date of separation agreement. There's some lenders that want that note or legalized. There's some lenders that actually don't. You can put it clearly on paper. You can clearly outline what's going to be done within that separation and divorce. And as long as it's witnessed and signed, a lender will, not all lenders, but some lenders will accept that. Other lenders will want it to obviously have it legalized. The other paperwork at times is you have a purchase agreement or a sales agreement, and say it's Alistair and wife. You're selling that now just to Alistair. So there's a transfer of ownership, right? You don't necessarily always have to do that. Sometimes it's not doesn't need to be that complicated as far as doing a purchase agreement and then a sales agreement and then a purchase agreement. But again, there are some lenders that want that out there. And then again, obviously, Alistair, you got to qualify, right? So it comes down to requalifying. What does your income look like? What do your debts look like? How much do you want to be borrowed? You got a stress test. And so there is that speed bump as well, is that you need to requalify for what you want to do. But as far as paperwork goes, really the only difference with the paperwork outside of what you normally do is that now you just have a signed a data separation agreement that clearly outlines what's going on with that equity in that refinance and what you're doing with the matrimonial debts, on top of everything else that needs to go in there with child support, spousal support, you know, what other asset divisions that you have. So that really is the only difference as far as paperwork goes, is having that signed and data separation agreement.
So I guess I'll ask, like, we know the values of homes in British Columbia are quite high, right? So we'll just take Cloverdale, for example, average home price, $1.5 million. Okay. So we have a couple that's now looking to, you know, unfortunately, you know, they're no longer seeing eye to eye, and they're going to now take a break from each other, right? So John and Jane are now separating. Jane wants to stay in the house. She has to requalify, pass the stress test. Her income is $60,000.
Right.
What are the chances of her now, though, being able to requalify at a $60,000 income, right?
Well, and that's a great question, is because that's a great question, and not much. If you have a $60,000 income, you're probably going to be able to qualify for a $300,000 mortgage,
right?
Yeah. So that's again where the co-signers may have to jump in. And unfortunately, if you don't have that co-signer, then maybe that's the time where you have to make the decision to sell the home.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. And that makes sense. And that's just the unfortunate parts, right, of the times we live in within British Columbia. And a lot of times, right, we may be forced to sell the home, but I guess the point that I wanted to make was that doesn't stop us from asking the question. Right.
Yeah.
Even though we know what the answer might actually be, it should never stop us from answering that question or from asking that question. I beg your pardon. Right. Because I always joke around, if you don't ask, you don't get. What's the worst that somebody can say? No. Right. Okay.
Well, and I also think you want to be in the opportunity of making the decision. Right. Yeah. Do I need to sell? Yes or no.
Yeah.
And if it's no, you don't need to sell, then you can make a decision on how you want to move forward with that.
Yeah.
And likewise, if you do need to sell, then you know that you didn't have the option to stay because you couldn't debt service it, right? So I find that asking the question also gives the empowerment of making a choice, because if you don't know, you can't really choose properly.
Sure.
Right. But if you do know, then you basically have an opportunity to say, hey, this is how I'm going to best move forward.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Awesome, buddy. I got a quick question for you. So what was it? The 10th? We had the rates announcement. And from my understanding, rates did not move. Any thoughts on what it may look like? Did you hear any type of language that might indicate that they're going to drop it next one, or they might just keep it the same again, or what's the feelings?
I think the feeling out there is our next Bank of Canada meeting, I believe, is June.
Yeah.
June.
Yeah.
And what I understand is that, you know, the consensus is they probably again will hold tight, or a 50-50 chance by dropping it a quarter of a point. And then the next Bank of Canada meeting after that, a lot of people feel that we're going to see our first prime rate drop in, almost over a year, right?
Yeah.
So going the opposite way. But again, Alistair, I've heard it so many different times and so many different predictions. And I just don't think it's fair to say, hey, this is what's going to happen. I believe our prime rate will drop. I believe that's going to happen at some point, but I also believe that our inflation rate needs to go where it needs to go. And that seems to be a bouncing ball, or that seems to be, depending on who's looking at it and how it's calculated, as far as what that true inflation rate is, right? So my feeling on it is my feeling is that our prime rate, our overnight lending rate, will drop. That's going to affect everybody that's in a variable rate mortgage, or anybody that has a loan that's based on the prime rate. The big question is when. It's just, when is that going to happen? Because I believe it will happen. It's just a matter of when is it going to happen. So
I just think they're holding. The reason I ask that, I truly believe that they're continuing to hold that because they are absolutely fearful, at least for Ontario and British Columbia, that real estate will start going bananas and ballistic again. And I think that that is literally a true fear, that that's why they've been pausing back on these rates. I think they actually wanted to do it back in March. I truly believe that was the appetite, was to do it in March. But I honestly believe they continue to look and they see that, you know, real estate right now, just through pausing it, it's not slow, right? It's still a busy environment, and everybody knows as soon as that rate drops, it's going to get super busy again. And I think
well, there's a lot of interesting just got announced in the federal budget too. That's going to be rolling out for first time home buyers, which we'll jump into maybe on our other pod. With first-time home buyers buying new construction. I believe it's new construction where they can use a 30-year amortization, which increases their purchase power, which decreases their monthly payment. So there's things that are being rolled out and that are being talked about. And then in conjunction, if the prime rate drops, you might see a heavier influx on people. But this is also what we did talk about too, Alistair, is that, you know, again, people who are waiting for these Bank of Canada meetings and waiting to decide on the purchase, my question to them when I have that conversation, well, are you planning on choosing a fixed or a variable rate? And again, as we talked about over and over and over again, is that, hey, if you're thinking about a fixed rate, you don't need to wait for the Bank of Canada announcement because it has no impact on fixed rates, right? So what are you waiting for? So in that, on the reverse side of that things, if they're thinking about doing a variable rate, and there's a lot of people now starting to think about variable rates once again, then maybe you are going to put that on pause, see what the Bank of Canada announcements are before you make a decision. But again, if you are doing a fixed rate, and most people are looking at those 2 and 3 year fixes right now, you don't need to wait for that Bank of Canada meeting because it will have no impact on the rates if you're doing a fixed.
Yeah, good point. Awesome. Well, man. Oh, and one quick thing. I don't know if you heard this. The parliamentary budget officer last week, he came out and said that Canada needs to build 1.3 million additional homes by 2030 in order to bring us to eliminate the country's housing gap. 1.3 million in the next 6 years. Yeah. What do we think the chances of that?
Slim to none?
I'm going with none. I'm not even going to give them slim. I'm going with none. So that's really interesting. It was a really interesting number. We could talk about that in another pod. I just found that was an interesting fact that we are at. So the number that people want to know, we are 1.3 million homes away from eliminating the gap of housing.
Yes. So back to even what we talked about, to eliminate the, now we need 1.3 million. And remember the price point they need to be sold at?
Yeah, 679.
So again, how is that going to really shape out?
Not going to happen, friends. It's just, it's an interesting thing, like the, because they, again, they're talking about all this money that's being doled out to the provinces to help eliminate the housing costs and all that sort of stuff. When as realtors, we keep screaming, guys, it's a supply issue. It's a supply issue. We can give enough money and we can give all money, but we have to build more houses.
Yeah.
And if we don't build those houses, nothing changes. So 1.3, that's the number.
And in fact, once you don't build them, your supply isn't there. And guess what happens to the housing costs? They're just going to keep on going up because there's the demand, but no supply. So it's just it almost seems like it's one's just chasing the tail for the other, right?
That's
so.
about it, right? That's about it. Well, man, I'm going to let you get out to your surf, sand, and tanning. I'm going to get
All
out
right, appreciate that.
Get back to work. You have an amazing week, my man. Thank you once again, everybody, for listening. Jeff and I, as always, truly appreciate it. We hope that you were able to take away some nuggets of learning. That's what we're here for, and that's what we enjoy doing. So, Jeff, my man, you have an amazing week. I'm going to get back to work. I got some clients to go take out while you people are
you got to
having
get back
fun.
to that dry toast and coffee.
That's what I'm saying. I'm going to live my week vicariously through you and my wife. That just sounded really weird. Again, I just like to state that Jeff and my wife are in different resorts. She's with my father-in-law. That just sounded really weird the way I put that. You have an amazing week, my man.
All right, my man.
All right,
Take
brother.
care.
We'll
Y'all
catch
have a
you.
nice day.
All right, man. You too.